Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Men with the Golden Tongues. I am your host, Micah, joined by my co-host, Brad.
What's up?
And special guest, friend of the show, all-around nice guy, apparently a gigantic person, our friend on the West Coast correspondent for TNP Studios, leader of the Flawedcast Network, and doing the world a favor and being on a show with Jay talking about politics so that none of us have to do it. It's Andy.
That's right. I'm officially part of the family now.
Yes. Yes. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Yeah, it's actually like that's pretty much all me and Jay talk about on Facebook Messenger all day. So it's like we should just make this into the podcast.
There you go.
So I took that hit for everybody. You're welcome.
See, and you can look at it as you're like the super special guest star because everyone has to pay to listen to your stuff on the network.
That's true of a lot of things. I'm all over I'm behind the paywall a lot, actually. There's a lot of people who might not even know that I'm part of Nerdpocalypse now, but the paying customers know.
That's right. The real fans know.
That's right.
None of those skinflint, cheap ass, bottom feeding takers.
You know what it is? I'm the Brock Lesnar of the Nerdpocalypse Network. I don't work for free, right?
Just come in when you get paid, bludgeon someone to death, and then walk away. And the last thing we see is Jimmy John's on your ass.
Yes. Although in my case, it's Samson microphones. And be sure to pick yourself up a wonderful Samson microphone at all fine audio retailers.
Today, we are going to review The Man with the Golden Gun. Now, I don't know about you guys, but as much as I rail against Roger Moore and Roger Moore Bond movies, this one is the guilty pleasure for me. And I don't think Roger Moore has too much to do with it. However, this movie could only be a Roger Moore Bond movie.
Correct. And yeah, this is when the goofy shit starts happening.
Yeah.
In the Bond films.
But it is Roger Moore's performance is kind of up and down for me. It's like, well, wait a minute. Like, are you goofball Roger Moore or are you goofball Roger Moore doing a Sean Connery impression? I don't know what you're doing. But I think what I like about this movie the most is Francisco Scaramanga, played by Christopher Lee. Almost said Jason Lee for a second.
Well, let's be clear. This movie is trash. Like it's not a good film. It's really not a good movie at all. But it is a lot of fun, and it's got a lot of fun stuff.
I was telling you guys before we started recording, I actually held this thing out. I hadn't seen it in a while, and I held it in higher regard than I think it deserved because just the stuff that sticks out in my mind is awesome. And there's a lot of stuff that really isn't that awesome. But like on paper, you got – okay, so Christopher Lee as the big bad, right?
Yeah.
Nick Knack, one of the classic, you know, sidekicks. And if you just – the basic plot – two of the hottest – inarguably two of the hottest Bond girls, right, are in this movie. Mm. And the plot, basically, like, the evil version of Bond, mano a mano, facing off on an island. Like, the ingredients are there, but the execution isn't.
Yep, that's it. Yep. That's exactly it. Like, it's got a lot of cool stuff, and then they just kind of get goofy with it. But, yeah. Are we ready to go? Any other initial comments?
Couple little factoids about the film. The Man with the Golden Gun was actually the last James Bond novel that was published by Ian Fleming, and it was done after his death. And they were originally going to make the movie after You Only Live Twice, but then, you know, war decided to break out in Cambodia where they were planning on filming it, so they really couldn't do that at that point. So they shelved it until now. This would also be the last Bond film that Harry Saltzman would produce. He would sell his shares to United Artists after the filming of the movie because he had run into some financial trouble. So Cubby Broccoli had it on his own after this. And then it's also Guy Hamilton's last Bond film that he would actually direct as well, which I was quite fine with, actually, because Guy Hamilton has a very distinct style in Bond films, and they were ready to move on past that at this point.
After this, Eon, the company, was formed, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Let's get started. We open on a tropical island where we meet a midget butler and a man with three nipples. I mean, if this isn't the most Roger Moore-esque opening for a Bond, like a midget butler and a dude with three nipples. All right, I'm watching a James Bond movie, guys.
Now this movie also has either, and I'm not just talking about Bond movies when I say this, I'm just talking about movies in general. Is the opening line of this film a great opening line or the greatest opening line?
90 seconds in, the greatest line in this or any James Bond film takes place, and I put it on. I knew it happened. I just wasn't anticipating it so soon, and I got to back it up and enjoy it a few times. It's phenomenal. Christopher Lee making his presence known immediately.
Which, and for those who don't know, of course, the opening line is "Knick-knack, Tabasco."
Knick-knack, Tabasco.
Jesus,
that giant booming voice—it's awesome.
I love Scaramanga. I mean, he's up there in the Bond villain echelon, pantheon, whatever on for me.
And I mean, I just appreciate the blatant bold product placement that just throw in there with this. I mean,
I like to imagine that's just life on the island, you know, yelling out to Knick Knack for various condiments.
Knick Knack, sour cream.
Well, these two gentlemen, Knick Knack and Francisco Scaramanga, are on this island with a beautiful lady, and another man named Rodney comes up, and he shows up on the island, and he receives payment from Knick Knack, and Knick Knack is like, I'll give you the other one later. I can't do a Knick Knack, guys. I haven't really tried to perfect a Knick Knack.
Half now and half later.
There you go. That is perfect.
Micah, do you recognize Rodney, by the way? He was in another Bond film previously.
Was it Diamonds?
Yes, yes. Yeah. He was the, I didn't know there was a pull down there guy.
Yeah, that's
from
right.
From Diamonds Are Forever.
So, a little continuity between the Bond movies that usually shits on all continuity. They meet Rodney. And Rodney gets half the payment, and he goes into a room, and Scaramanga meets Rodney, and Rodney tries to kill him. This leads to a game of cat and mouse, and at first we think Rodney is the predator, but all of a sudden, like, he's taken into this like murder funhouse, and it the audience realizes that, oh, Rodney is the prey. And
But Knick Knack's working against Scaramanga the whole time, which is interesting.
Right, because
it's a weird dynamic that they have between the two of them.
It's a very weird dynamic because it's like a game where Knick Knack is trying to have Scaramanga killed in this murder house against Rodney. And it turns out Scaramanga, who is, you know, just awesome, he ends up killing Rodney, and after he finds his golden gun, the thing in the James Bond 007 GoldenEye game that was outlawed by people who don't know how to play. So he kills Rodney with the golden gun, and then he exchanges like this little friendly banter with Nick Nack, like, oh, you almost had me, Nick Nack.
I'll get you next time, sir, Monsieur.
So yeah, like they have a this is like a frenemy relationship, right? Like but Nick Nack is like completely loyal to Scaramanga.
Right. Like he's gonna do it the right way. He's not trying to pull one over on his boss.
Right, right. So I think this was a cool little opening.
You know what's not cool about this opening for the second film in the row?
What's that?
Where's James Bond?
Well, I mean, technically,
I'm not counting the mannequin. I'm not counting the mannequin.
There's a Madame. There's a
wax version.
Yeah. There's a Madame Tussaud version of James Bond, just sitting in the corner there.
How weird that Scaramanga has a wax figure of James Bond. I wonder if that's going to come into play later in the film.
Oh, probably not. That's probably just a weird quirk.
Seems an odd thing to be there, just randomly.
See, that's called being clever, guys.
Is it?
We introduce something and then we call back to it 2 hours later. See, you probably forgot, but then, aha!
Now, what's funny is that in the book, Scaramanga is actually more akin to the Rodney character. He was just like a mafia hitman, basically. He wasn't anything. He wasn't like the yin to Bond's yang in the novel that they made him to in the movie. Which, if you're going to get Christopher Lee, you got to make the character a little bit more interesting. So
yeah, because it's Christopher Lee. Like yeah, sure. He's walking around in this Russian style jumpsuit and looking like a badass, just lounging. So. Christopher Lee shoots off the fingers of the Bond mannequin, and then we get to the title credits. These title credits are
they're not good.
They're not good. they're not visually interesting at all. And it's just like a bunch of reflections in a pool of water and a woman stroking a gun. And it's not. And then all of a sudden, like, there's this woman in silhouette dancing with this red sparkler in the background. I don't know what any of this has to do with the movie.
You got some shadow nipple, though.
Yeah. Well, everybody loves shadow nipple.
A time-honored tradition in James Bond movies.
You know what's the worst part about the credits, though? The actual titles themselves are pretty uninspired. The song
fucking
sucks. I hate this Bond song.
Guys.
He carries a powerful weapon. It charges a million a shot.
I got a confession to make.
You love it, don't you?
I find it catchy.
Oh, my God.
I find it catchy, man. Like, I was going around singing. I watched this thing earlier today, like 6 o'clock in the morning. And my wife was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you saying, like, this is not. I'm like, this is Lulu.
I like the tune, like you know how they use it throughout the movie,
the hook, the melody is good.
That's cool, but fucking Lulu is just bellowing this thing.
Right,
out.
This was not the singer.
The man with the golden gun.
this reeks of Shirley. We really need Shirley Bassey to sing this song, but we have Lulu. We should probably rewrite the song to match her vocal range. Nah, let's just fucking keep the Shirley Bassey song. And just fucking let her do it. This
fucking
is fine.
Great value, Shirley Bassey.
Oh my God. I don't know. It's catchy.
Well,
man.
Well, and the other thing is, too, is there's another song that came along because of this. So, like, when they do these Bond movies, they have multiple artists submit songs for them, or at least this is when they kind of started to do it. So Alice Cooper did a song that you listeners will hear in just a second here, where that's like a million times better.
Oh, for sure.
And they only didn't use it because he submitted it like 2 days late, like 2 days past the deadline.
And like, then, way to fucking go, Alice Cooper.
Right.
Like an asshole professor. Nope. Sorry. It's really good, and I would have given you an A+, but you didn't turn it in when I wanted you to turn it in, so sorry.
Not had the time.
Yeah,
it's very possible. And plus, also John Barry wrote the song that they did use in the film, and based a lot of the score off of the song, obviously, as you hear throughout the movie. So I guess that's one of the other reasons they used it. But goddamn, the Alice Cooper song is just.
I read John Barry scored the whole film in like 3 weeks.
Well, that's kind of what John Barry does. Like he's kind of a master
really
at that.
Good though for like a rush job, it's actually pretty good.
I'm happy to have John Barry back. I liked George Martin's score in the last film, but I just the John Barry score is like the comfort blanket.
Yeah.
For the Bond films for me, especially the early ones.
Yeah.
God, next film. Holy shit.
Well, that'll be next month. This right now in London, a golden bullet with James Bond's code 007 etched into the surface is received by MI6. So it's believed that it was sent by the man with the golden gun, Francisco Scaramanga. M is like, what do you know about him? He's like, well, he
nothing except for all these things.
Nothing except for the fact that he's a trick shot artist. He's about 6'3", 200 pounds.
Grew up in the circus, has three nipples.
Right. And by the way, he has three nipples. What the fuck? How the fuck do you know that and no one's seen this man?
It's in his file. It's the only thing in his file is the fact that he's three nipples.
This is like kind of a staple of Roger Moore, but I think this is the most egregious example of just James Bond's a fucking know-it-all.
This whole film is that basically. Like there are things that James Bond knows in this movie that he has no business knowing whatsoever. Like for example, like at the end of the film, when he's trying to tell Goodnight how to disable the Solex machine, he shouldn't know any of that. And he's just sitting there giving her like a blow by blow.
He's an expert on solar power, by the way.
Right.
In his spare time, he likes to learn up about alternative fuel methods.
Now, to be fair, in this scene, M has what might be the greatest M line in the history of the franchise. Because basically, so the gold bullet says to M that that Scaramanga has a contract out on Bond. And Bond says, who would pay $1 million to have me killed? To which M replies, jealous husbands, outraged chefs, humiliated tailors, the list is endless.
Good morning, sir. Carl Thorpe, chief of staff. What do you know about a man called Scaramanga, 007?
Scaramanga? Oh, yes. The man with the golden gun. Born in a circus, father the ringmaster, possibly Cuban, mother English, a snake charmer. He was a spectacular trick shot artist by the time he was 10 and a local Rio gunman at 15. The KGB recruited him there and trained him in Europe, where he became an overworked, underpaid assassin. He went independent in the late 50s. Current price, $1 million a hit. No photograph on file. does have one distinguishing feature, however. A superfluous papilla.
A what?
A mammary gland. A third nipple, sir. He always uses a golden bullet, hence man with a golden gun. Present domicile unknown. I think that's all. Why, sir? Charming trinket. Even has my number on it.
Precisely.
Well, obviously, it's useless as a bullet. I mean, sir, who would pay $1 million to have me killed?
Jealous husbands, outraged chefs, humiliated tailors. The list is endless. Moreover, this trinket, as you call it, was sent with a note requesting special delivery to you. It's initialed with an S.
Scaramanga's fingerprints were on it. They've been verified by the CIA.
Why would he alert me?
Psychological. He counts on his reputation to terrify his intended victim.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Oh, God. So, because of the perceived threat on Bond's life, M relieves Bond of his mission, finding a scientist named Gibson, who is like the authority on, you know, solar panels or whatever. He's the authority on the MacGuffin of the movie.
Right.
Yes. The man with the golden MacGuffin.
So Bond unofficially sets out to find Scaramanga. He comes in, has a little bit of banter with Moneypenny, and kind of pumps her for information. And because of that information, he heads to Beirut.
Did any of you know where Beirut is before this film, by the way? I had to look it up on a map because I legitimately had no idea.
Look, I still don't know where it is because I don't care enough about it to find where it is.
They put it up on a map when there's a fucking terrorist attack there every 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, for those wondering, it's in Lebanon, which itself is a tiny ass country.
Where's Lebanon?
It is right
over there.
Yeah, it's over there.
That part of the world you ain't going to, you know?
Yep. Wow. I would have never found Lebanon. I just looked it up.
It's because it's so fucking, it's like the Rhode Island of countries. It's like, it's microscopic.
Oh, man. So Bond travels to Beirut. He questions a French belly dancer that was sleeping with an agent, a 00 agent, on his last night alive.
002.
Yeah, 002 was killed by Scaramanga. The bullet pierced, went straight through 002, and this whore belly dancer is like, wow, I'm really going to keep this thing now. It's going to be my lucky charm. Apparently, the guy was catching feelings, and she didn't really want him to catch feelings. So when that bullet killed him, she's like, wow, that really got me out of a jam. This is going to be my this is going to be my lucky pendant now, because I really didn't want to get into a relationship with this guy.
So like the dudes in the club where the belly dancer is are giving Bond the side eye for what appears no other reason, the fact that he's enjoying the show.
Why did they attack him?
Right. Like, there's no reason at all.
Like, God damn it. Like, this is what I'm like, one step forward, two steps back. Like, I like this movie, but God damn it. Like, it doesn't make sense. There's a couple
of different usually things. There's a reason for goons to attack, but in this case, just, hey, don't run off with our belly dancer there, fella.
So the dancer keeps the bullet in her navel. And after this discussion about how, you know, 002 was murdered by an assassin and the bullet flew through his body, so she took the bloody bullet and decided to put it in her navel, she's like, but that's the past. Let's start fucking. And Bond is like, all right, whatever, I'm a whore too. So but he's trying to get this thing, and he Roger Moore has no game, man. Like, he's all like, he knocks something down, Oh, pardon me. I'm very clumsy. Blah, 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 blah. And then he kneels down and he starts kissing her abdomen. And he's like, oh, you have a wonderful abdomen. Like, all right, dude, shut up. And he starts to grab the bullet with his teeth. And then the goons come in and he swallows the thing, right? Now, he swallows this thing. He's like, oh, take me to a CVS or whatever, right? And
well, real quick, this fight sucks also.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, the fight in the dressing room when he's fighting all the goons. So the early Bond films did this really smart thing that Peter Hunt came up with when he was editing the film where they would cut away on impact because you didn't need to see the impact. Like you need to see what led up to it. And then you had the sound effect and they would cut away. And it made the battle seem really exciting and really, really tense. They show everything in this fight. And it looks kind of goofy as a result.
I don't think an editor was involved at all because the mirror gets hit. This is a famous movie flub, actually. The mirror gets hit in the fight, and you can see the director, the cameraman.
Yes, you can see the crew behind it. Yep.
The guys in catering back there eating donuts. There's like everybody else. And they just left it. They're like, fuck it, whatever. Move on.
So Bond is... Bond is fine. He hails a cab, takes him to, you know, your local Dwayne Reed or whatever. We cut to Q Branch and
we
see the bullet and we get an explanation that this bullet flattens on impact for maximum damage. I have a question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell did he swallow that thing and not get his insides torn apart?
That's a great. Well, he might have gotten I think he went to the pharmacy to get like charcoal or something like that so he could throw it up. I don't think he passed it.
Yeah, basically. But the way this bullet is, it looks like a plant that has blossomed. Like,
oh, I see what you're saying.
I can't imagine.
Like, you're saying
it's a bummer coming out either end. Is what
right, it's true. I couldn't notice that because I was too busy watching Q and this other guy with the giant mustache trying to out-British the shit out of each other in this scene.
I love, just in James Bond movies, Desmond Llewellyn is maybe my favorite actor in James Bond movies, and just the contempt he has for James Bond is just fantastic. He's asking questions about the purity of the gold, and he's like, there wouldn't be enough nickel in the gold 007. You fucking idiot.
Like, everybody knows that.
The fellow who made the bullet 007. Try to keep up.
So with the help of Q Branch,
here's the thing about Q Branch and this whole fucking movie, he doesn't get a gadget.
No, Scaramanga has all the gadgets.
Yes, there's one thing Q does for Bond in this whole movie, and it's not that exciting.
No, it's really not.
But yeah, that's kind of weird. Scaramanga's got some wacky gadgets. The golden gun itself, I think, is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. The flying car that he has later in the film, of course, too.
Yes.
I think they had to dial the gadgets back after Kananga balloon in the last movie. think they had to step it back a little bit after that.
Okay, so a flying car sounds cool in theory, but what the fuck was that thing? Like an AMC Hornet?
Yes.
Terrible.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. I've got some factoids about that too. So.
No, excuse me. It was a Matador.
Yeah, Bond drove the Hornet.
Right.
In that one, so.
Fucking cars suck so bad.
So, with the help of Q Branch, they find the bullet's manufacturer as a man named Lazar.
Lazar, I concur.
That's the fellow who made the bullet, you fucking moron. God damn it, 007.
Oh, shit. So
have you drank yourself retarded, 007?
I mean, how could you not know the thing that you don't know?
We knew it. Yes, quite, yes. I knew it. How did you not know it, Mr. Scaramangafax? Mm. 007.
Said it, Bond may not know Lazar, but Lazar knows him because when Bond meets Lazar, Lazar says, your reputation precedes you.
Your reputation as a secret agent precedes you.
Fucking everybody knows who James Bond is in this one.
Yes. Like as we've discussed before, Bond's notoriety ebbs and flows based on what the movie needs from it, basically.
All right, James Bond. 3-time cover boy on Secret Agent magazine.
Here you will find only craftsmanship and quality. Mass production. Your water PPK, for instance, I leave to others.
What about ammunition?
Designed to individual requirements, whatever they may be.
In gold, if I want it.
I have already done that for a client.
I know you have. Francisco Scaramanga.
My relationship with a client, Mr. Bond, is strictly confidential. Like a doctor, priest with a penitent.
Of course. Yet you make guns for fingerless hoodlums. Bullets for assassins.
Mr. Bond, bullets do not kill. It is the finger that pulls the trigger.
Exactly. I'm now aiming precisely at your groin. So speak or forever hold your peace.
I've never seen Mr. Scaramanga.
On a cost per bullet basis, he must be your best customer.
That is true, but unfortunately he seems only to fire them occasionally.
When was the last shipment?
Mr. Bond, this is impossible. I cannot...
You're quite right. An inch too low.
So, he meets Lazar in Morocco, and he intimidates him, you know, by pointing a gun at his crotch, which, you know... I don't see that coming out of Roger Moore, James Bond, but
hey, speak now or forever hold your peace is a pretty good line.
It is. You know what? I'll give it to you. And he provides info on the bullets and you know who he sends them to. So Bond travels to a casino where he meets Andrea Anders, the woman from the beginning of the movie, who is Scaramanga's mistress.
Who is Maude Adams, who's all over the James Bond franchise.
Yes. Yeah, she would end up being in 3 Bond movies total. Maude Adams would.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Jesus.
The biggest one is she's Octopus.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I haven't seen Octopus in a long time. I think I've seen Octopus once.
Guys, can I tell you that I am a big Maude Adams fan in the Bond franchise. Oh, my God. She's my absolute favorite, I think.
Maud.
Now how much do you like her? Like, would you throw Britt Eklund out of bed to sleep with her?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I would. I'm much more of a brunette guy, for sure.
Ah, fair enough.
Plus, Eklund in this movie she doesn't do it for me.
She's a total dipshit, but she looks
she looks wonderful, but she's an idiot.
Yes. No, but like what Bond does later in the film where he literally shoves Britt Eklund in a closet to have sex with Maude Adams, like that's me right there. That's absolutely happening.
Yeah. That's what I was referring to. Like, get the hell out of here, bitch. I gotta fuck this other bitch. the audacity of this man.
Oh, don't worry, like, baby. Don't worry. Your turn will come. Nigga, fuck you, man. Like,
he literally says that. Like, that's a real line in this movie.
Right, and it's not like she doesn't realize that he didn't just have sex with her. Like, she knows. She's aware of what's going on here.
Oh, my
don't
God.
Don't worry, darling. I'll go wash my penis off and give you a turn.
Yeah, Bond was pretty man-whorish in Live and Let Die, but I think that this might be his all-time just brazen gigolo-ness in this movie.
I can't name another James Bond moment as whorish as I'm starting to fuck a chick, here comes another chick, better throw this chick in the closet and fuck this chick. But don't worry, I'm going to get to that one later.
Oh, shit. You know what? This might be the inspiration for that R. Kelly video, Trapped in the Closet. It's pretty much the same plot. It's pretty much the same plot, right? Like, this woman is like, oh, hey, this woman takes R. Kelly home. R. Kelly has to hide in the closet because her man is coming. There's a midget somewhere in the movie. There's guns. Like, Trapped in the Closet is the black version of The Man with the Golden Gun. Oh, man.
Yes.
So, Bond.
This is waylaid in a shiffer robe.
Bond follows Anders to Hong Kong with the help of Mary Goodnight, who is just pathetic, in my opinion.
She starts off as kind of a smartass and gets one over on him, right?
Yeah.
And then just proceeds to become the dumbest person in the movie.
Yes.
But for a second there, she's like informed. She knows what's going on. She's been on this post for 2 years. And, oh, we need to find the green rolls. There's a bunch of green rolls around here, moron. And then dumb for the rest of the movie.
So they follow Anders to a hotel, the Peninsula Hotel. I don't know how he got her room number.
He bribed somebody.
All right, I'll give you that. And he meets with her, and he pressures her into telling him about Scaramanga. Now, this is very uncharacteristic. Well, I mean, technically, it's only been one other movie,
right?
But I don't see Roger Moore, and I'm seeing this through hindsight. I don't see Roger Moore literally strong arming.
Well, he didn't like it either. He hated the scene.
Yeah, like they should have figured out another way to do this, because look,
this is a total Sean Connery move, like right. On and off the set. But yeah, it's weird seeing Roger Moore like it actually just because of. Like growing up, my mom like had the biggest crush on Roger Moore, loved all the Roger Moore James Bond movies, so I've seen him a bunch. Mm. And I like, so I was kind of taken aback when I saw this. I'm like, Roger Moore doesn't smack bitches around. That's what the hell?
Yeah,
but yeah, it was so just, it's kind of jarring.
It's very, very odd.
I mean, he also speaks to her very callously as well, because you know, she's like, why, you know, you can't trust me. And he's like, no, I can. He's like, but, you know, if you don't, then Scaramanga is going to have a gold bullet for you. He's like, and that would be a shame because they're very expensive.
God damn.
But yeah, he like gets her arm behind her back and she's like, ow, it's hurting. I'm going to fucking break it if you don't tell me. I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah, it's very, Roger. Very, very off-putting. Fortunately, this would be the last time that we would see Roger Moore, you know, trying to Connery his way through an interrogation with a lady. Yeah,
I don't know that he'd found his version of the character yet.
No, he would. That would definitely get locked down next movie, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he is, like you accurately called it, the Adam West James Bond.
So, one of the bits of information that Anders gives to Bond is that she meets him. To give him the bullets at the Bottoms Up Club. So Bond goes to the club, and it is actually the location of Scaramanga's next hit. Gibson, the solar panel MacGuffin guy, who obviously had no point in being in this movie, but I guess they want to show a scene of Scaramanga being incredibly competent as a villain and
yes.
as an assassin. And I think it's one of the reasons why I enjoy Scaramanga as a villain. He is Bond's equal in every way except for the one flaw that a really good villain has, which is hubris.
Yes.
And I really like this character. I really like his gimmick.
Well, and also we complain all the time because obviously in Bond films, there's always all these instances that stack up where the villain has like this prime opportunity to kill Bond and doesn't.
Right.
And it doesn't make sense why they wouldn't. And this is the only film that I can recall where there's actually a reason that Scaramanga doesn't kill him the handful of times that he gets beforehand.
Right.
Because he looks at Bond as the ultimate test, basically the ultimate validation of his skills.
Right.
Yeah, like the trophy hunter kind of thing.
Right.
So so Scaramanga kills Gibson, and James Bond is like, "Oh shit, what was that?" And he pulls his gun out, and all of a sudden, this cop comes along. He's like, "Oh, you're under arrest." He's like, "Wait a minute, what?" And Nick Knack is coming over to steal the Solex agitator, which, I mean, you might as well call it like the Matrix of leadership. Like it doesn't fucking matter. Like it just sounds ridiculous. But
the Illudium Q-36 explosive space modulator.
Before Bond can, you know, tell the cop, "Hey, you know, I'm innocent." The cop, whose name is Lieutenant Hip, escorts him away from the scene, and he gets Nick Knack out of there. Now, in actuality, Lieutenant Hip is escorting Bond to a hidden headquarters in the wreck of the RMS Queen Elizabeth in a local harbor. Hip is working with Bond. Now, I don't know why he didn't tell him that during the car ride there.
Well, because he was with, I think he was with the Hong Kong police, who he could not reveal that to, basically, I guess. He made a throwaway explanation as to why that could be.
Yeah, but then he's like, Bond is like, "What are you doing? The police department's over there," or something like that, right?
Mm. Well, he said the city they were trying to go to was over across the other side of the harbor.
Ah, okay.
So
I gotcha.
Now, this set on the Queen Elizabeth, I think, is one of the more underrated ones because nobody really talks about it, but it's quite a fucking thing.
That's my favorite set in this movie for sure. I like it a lot.
Oh, because it's amazing. Like it's just really smartly designed because everything, because the ship is obviously like on its side at like a 45 degree angle. So everything in the set is crooked into this cool little juxtaposition. And they actually designed it that way on purpose because they wanted it to be kind of a common thing to like the fun house that Scaramanga had as well.
Yeah, it's off-putting as they're walking through it, but then they've like built staircases and floors at the correct angle within the structure at a 45 degree angle, so it looks really crazy as they're walking through it, but it's really neat.
It's very groovy looking, but it reminds me again of Adam West's Batman where all the villains are shot at Dutch angles. So I don't know. It just, I don't know. I have a bias.
If you treat these movies as Adam West Batman, you know, you can kind of enjoy it better because they're super campy, right?
Oh, absolutely. Like even to the point where you have a really cool stunt, but you undercut it by having a stupid sound effect.
For fuck's sake.
Try not to think about that until we get to that point in the movie.
Made me angry. That stunt's so goddamn rad. And then I read about it, and the stuntman did it on the first take.
Yeah.
And, like, legitimately did that.
Oh, man. M assigns Bond to retrieve the Solex Agitator 9000.
And by the way, folks, buckle up because the crazy batshit Roger Moore James Bond bullshit is about to go into hyperspeed from this point forward.
"But I think I should report, sir, that Scaramanga does not have a contract on me. He couldn't have missed me tonight. Instead, he hit some chap coming out of a club. I got quite a shock when I saw who it was."
"I should think you did."
"Our missing solar energy expert, Gibson."
"Yes, Gibson. He was prepared to come back under certain conditions. That's why I'm out here with Professor Frazier. Lieutenant Hip was making a preliminary contact. I almost wish that Scaramanga had a contract on you. Was Gibson cooperative?
He wanted to bargain for immunity, suggested another meeting in Bangkok to discuss terms.
Why Bangkok?
I got the impression he worked there for High Fat.
That name's come up before.
A multimillionaire. Head of High Fat Enterprises. All of them legitimate, as far as we know.
What did Gibson propose bargaining with, Lieutenant?
The Solex claimed it was 95% efficient.
If he developed a solar cell that efficient, he solved the energy crisis. Yes, so you've told me. Coal and oil will soon be depleted. Uranium's too dangerous. Geothermal and tidal control too expensive. I know all that. Where's the Solex now?
Solex agitator, sir. The essential unit to convert radiation from the sun into electricity on an industrial basis. Well, it's only about that size.
It won't take me long to check out Gibson's efficiency claim. This is really exciting. Now, may I see it, Lieutenant?
He showed it to me at the bar and replaced it in his pocket. And after he was shut, it wasn't there. I looked.
Gentlemen, I congratulate you. Instead of getting our hands on a perfected Solex, we're left with a useless corpse and no leads.
One lead, sir. Assuming Gibson was killed by Scaramanga, whoever hired him could afford $1 million.
Are you suggesting High Fat?
He could afford it.
Out of petty cash.
So, Q is down there for no reason at all, but it turns out James Bond needs a nipple.
So,
and this is what upset. Okay, so being Q, you're like, is it a laser nipple? Is it like a grappling hook nipple? Anything? No.
Fuck,
just a regular ass nipple.
Let it be a laser pointer nipple. Like, at least that would have some sort
something.
Of some sort of impact. I don't know. And put it on the right, like the correct side. Like I here's my input to trivia for this movie. Nipples are not supposed to go in a horizontal line because that's not where the mammary gland goes to. So it's an obvious fake. You see, had they done their nipple research, they would know that nipples are positioned vertically on each side of the body. So there you go. Obvious.
I don't know anything about nipples, 007.
Try to keep up, Q. Put the nipple in the right place.
I'm a gadget man. I'm not an expert in superfluous nipples, 007.
So,
but that's literally all Q's good for in this whole fucking movie. There's nothing. There's no gadgets.
Yeah. But you know what? I still like Desmond Llewellyn so much. His presence in the movie is like comfort food to me.
Yes. Especially if you kind of don't like this James Bond, you can sort of identify with Desmond Llewellyn because he doesn't like him.
Oh, yeah.
I feel you, Desmond Llewellyn. I hate this asshole too.
So Bond travels to Bangkok to meet High Fat, a wealthy Thai entrepreneur suspected of arranging Gibson's murder. Bond. Okay, so when he gets there, right, like he's posing as Scaramanga, and
right.
When he gets there, he meets a naked woman swimming. She's just skinny dipping, and he's like, "Oh, what's your name?" And her name is Chu Mi. I mean, like, I get it. Like, it's supposed to be a double entendre, but at some point, like, why don't we just go full bore, like, with pussy galore? Like, we need to do that more often. Like, oh, what's your name? Lick my pussy is my name. Like, what the fuck? I don't know. It just, look, like, fucking go for it, man. So High Fat comes in and he's like, "What are you doing here?" And James Bond takes off his shirt and he has that fake nipple. And High Fat is
I like how that's how he knew that High Fat would recognize who he was pretending to be.
This fucking master assassin that very few people have seen, but everybody knows he's got a third nipple.
Oh, we didn't actually get into this. The reason that they decided high fat was the guy is the like is pretty weak.
Oh yeah, because he's rich. And he has a concern about the solar energy crisis.
Yeah.
That's right. Literally the only two. Like,
who's got money to spend $1 million on an assassin? Like, well, I mean, there's this guy high fat up in Thailand's got some money. All right, fuck it, go check him out.
Yeah, they're like, we're here, like we're on this side of the earth. We might as well go check it out real quick.
Yeah, the producers of this movie make no distinction between Asian countries at all. So, fuck it, he's Asian.
It's all the same side of the world.
Thailand, fucking kung fu, karate, sumo wrestlers. You know, Thailand, sure.
So one of my favorite scenes in any movie when Bond does this is when he's undercover and he talks about himself in the third person.
Oh my god!
Because he makes himself such a
James
badass.
Bond is an excellent assassin and very tall and quite handsome with a large penis. So look out for him.
Oh,
he'll
man.
Fuck all your women.
So as Scaramanga, he meets with High Fat and he arranges for dinner at High Fat's estate at 9 p.m. However, his plan backfires because unbeknown to Bond, Scaramanga himself is operating at High Fat's estate, looking like a Kentucky colonel with his white suit, white shirt, black tie.
And apparently like a junior partner in High Fat's business, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if this is on purpose or not, but like when they cut to Christopher Lee watching Bond go through his, you know, go through his charade with binoculars, like the look on his face just says, look at this fucking guy trying his fucking games. Listen, it might be completely unintentional. I might be reading too much into it, but that's just the sense that I get
from that
facial expression.
I think Christopher Lee is a phenomenal actor. And I think that the real Christopher Lee is looking at Roger Moore like, look at this guy. I could have been fucking James Bond. Fucking
so,
dick.
Speaking of Christopher Lee, do either of you two know the tie that he has to the James Bond franchise besides the fact that he was in this movie?
I do.
Yes. You can educate Micah then, because Micah has no clue.
No, he's Ian Fleming's like step cousin.
Ah, okay. So you do know.
There you go. That's one of the very few pieces of knowledge that I know because I like this stupid ass movie so much.
Yeah, apparently he was trying to get him on earlier. Like they was it Dr. No or something that he wanted him to?
Yeah, he wanted him to be Dr. No, but he was like there was some I forget why, but
not racist enough, probably.
Right, he didn't look Asian enough. So yeah. Let's put him in the movie where they're actually in Asia. That's a better plan.
So let's have a white guy pretend to be Cuban. That's better.
So the name Scaramanga, by the way, was a guy that Ian Fleming knew that was his equal in grade school that he fucking hated. Like he couldn't stand the dude. So when he made this character, he was like, well, I'm just gonna use this guy's fucking name.
That's hilarious.
It's a very Ian Fleming thing for him to do, for
Man,
sure.
I gotta start writing. I know a lot of assholes who would be very interesting characters. And that way I could talk about myself in the third person. Wow, that Micah guy, he's fucking awesome. He's funny and he's good looking and he has a gigantic penis with very, very smooth, non-wrinkly balls. It's amazing.
And then Micah came across the most contemptuous creature he'd ever met, Jay.
That Micah guy, he's very stoic and you know, doesn't say much, but, you know, his stern looks. Meanwhile, that evil Jay is a fucking motor mouth. He's his exact opposite. He's fucking short, talks all the goddamn time, doesn't shut the hell up. Like, all right.
I kind of want to read this book now.
Hey, all I'm saying is Jackson Rao, not a bad Bond villain name that you could use. That's a really good answer. Just call him Jackson Rao. That's all you have to do. Sounds exotic.
So that's your plan, Mr. Jackson Rao.
And that, you know, and it, yeah, it sounds exotic, and then you just figure out, like, oh, it's just a black guy.
Oh, Scaramanga, Francisco Scaramanga. Oh, it's a white guy. Oh, all right.
I have a feeling that Jackson Rao as a villain might not quite measure up to the heights of Bond, if you get what I'm saying.
Oh, shit.
Maybe he could be like the knick-knack in Micah's book.
Oh, man.
Jay Tabasco!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. All right.
We're gonna get shit for this episode.
Right. Look, this is how we'll know if he's listening to these things.
Right.
So when Bond goes back as Scaramanga to the estate,
he happens to be wearing what might be the largest bow tie not found on a clown in the history of humankind. I've never seen a bigger bow tie on a legitimate tuxedo before in my life.
We quickly get introduced to High Fat's two nieces.
Yes.
And
no, Hip.
Oh, yeah. Hip. I'm sorry.
Hip's nieces. Right.
Look. I'm a racist. They all look like Hip, High Fat, nieces, whatever. They all look alike to me.
Look, every Asian character in this movie has a shitty, horrible name, but they are different people.
Yeah. They have names that are written by fucking white guys. High Fat.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out if there's like a joke, you know, because they like a lot of punny names. Is there supposed to be a joke with High Fat?
I don't know. Like you would think that there would be, but it's not apparent. It's not apparent.
Yeah. I don't know. So Bond goes to the estate at night, and he is captured by two sumo wrestlers and Nick Knack.
Not for lack of him trying to disable one of the sumo wrestlers through atomic wedgie, basically.
All right, what was he doing in the first place? Because he just grabbed two handfuls.
He
of
did.
Cheeks.
He was grabbing some cheeks.
He's like, well, I'm James Bond. Let me try to fuck my way out of this. No, that doesn't work. All right.
Oh shit.
like it's not good when a future Austin Powers movie literally doesn't have to change much about this scene to spoof it. Like, they don't have to exaggerate what happens in the scene when they're spoofing what's going on. That's not a good thing.
He twists the knot on the sumo diaper, and like, I guess that crushes the guy's nuts or something.
Yeah, I guess so. But Nick Knack comes out of nowhere, doing his best Aquaman impression, and hits him with a trident.
Yeah, and is like about to stab him to death.
Yeah, man, like Nick Knack's a little bastard, man. Like he's like he gets over top of Bond, and he measures it, right? Like he's like, all right, I want to hit right here.
Right, and then in the middle of his throat.
right in his throat, man. And he's about to do it. But Low Slim comes along, and he's like, nah, man, not in my house. Like, you get that dead body out of here. See, this is, if Scaramanga did this, this would be one of those instances where I'm like, what are you doing, dude? Like,
right.
You got him. Like, go kill him right now. But High Fat did it, so... High Fat is the dummy.
So let's do this foolproof plan. Let's kill him by sending him to my karate school. Mike, I have to imagine that this is Spectre Island's Asian campus. That's the only thing that I can figure. That's the only thing that I could figure the reason why this karate, this murder karate school exists, apparently. Like, does he do this often? Like, does he always send his enemies to the karate school to get murdered by the Asian version of Johnny from The Karate Kid?
Oh, shit, he is.
Oh, shit. God damn it. All right. He's Bond is at this karate school, right? And the fighters, Johnny comes up and he's taunting Bond, and Bond is like, another dude comes up. He's taunting Bond. Ladies are like, get up there. Like, you're supposed to be this big man. Get up there and start fighting. So he does.
Right after we watched a quick fight to the death just to enjoy
our right. Right.
Yeah.
It's just what we do with the karate school. All right. First, the men with swords will murder each other. All right. That guy's dead. Throw him in the pile. James Bond. James Bond.
Here's your pre-fight entertainment.
Going to watch a man get stabbed to death. Then we'll have tea.
It's basically real life Mortal Kombat.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. Like, don't you hate when the mid-card match is so good and then the main event is just like, God damn it. Like, this was a waste.
Those guys got the fight of the night bonus for sure.
So the dude in tan definitely went to the pay window after this one. Because the other guy went to the morgue.
Oh, shit. So James Bond is fighting Asian Johnny, and Asian Johnny is kicking his ass.
Chula, chula, chula.
All of a sudden, James Bond gets in a lucky punch, bows, and jumps out
and
of a
balls out.
Window.
How did he know the wall would just cave way and it would take him right outside?
So, all right, I got a beef with this next scene, right? Hip and his nieces
just happened to roll up
and they're like, how did you know? Like, oh, everybody knows that High Fat owns this place, so you know, guest. And all right,
can we also ask why apparently he's had his nieces with him all night long,
right,
at this point as well?
What, he had dropped him off at a sleepover or something, and so he was picking him up.
I guess that's a plausible explanation.
So while High Fat and his two nieces are fighting, James is just kind of standing there, and the nieces are kicking ass.
It's fucking hip, God damn it!
Oh yeah, damn! I really am a racist, guys. Like I, like I'm, like I don't mean to be.
All y'all look alike.
So Hip and his nieces dispatch these extras from the 1985 Kung Fu game.
Bond does get the light punch fatality on the one guy.
And they dispatch all of them, right? And they start running. And they start running away because they're, you know, they're not dead. They're just unconscious, right? So they come, they start chasing them again. And Hip and his two nieces get in their car, and James is trying to catch up with them, and they're like, hang on, and they just leave James Bond.
Right. And there's no reason for them to have either. Like the guys were far enough away.
Right.
That Hip could have stopped for 2 seconds
and
to let him in the car.
Like, you can't say, well, maybe Hip thought that he was in the car. No. Hip turns around and says, hang on. And then the two nieces are like, ting, ting, tong, 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 or whatever they're saying. And obviously, like, hey, what are you doing? James Bond's back there. Like, what was the point of them coming?
Just to beat up the beginner students, I guess, basically.
God damn it. Like, that's such a Terrence thing to do. Like, he would I could see Terrence showing up. Right, like, hey, I'm the cavalry. I just want to fight somebody, and then, all right, you on your own. God damn it!
So this is the kind of thing that sort of, I mean, it's not any more obvious than this movie and the last movie, but where they're they're kind of like trying to glom onto what's popular at the time. So they kind of made half a blaxploitation movie last time.
They're making half a Bruce Lee movie in this one.
Right, yeah. Like, the kids like chop sake movies. Let's make one, huh? Like if you just throw in some shitty kung fu, the kids are like, oh, man, James Bond's doing kung fu. I got to go see that.
Oh, man.
And it's terrible. Like, he's supposed to be a good fighter, right? And he's really, he's fucking 50-year-old Roger Moore. He still looks okay in this one. He would get bloated and terrible later in the series. This is probably, this is peak handsome.
Yes, this is peak handsome Roger Moore.
Where he can still respectfully take his shirt off.
Yeah. And hit on women who are like 20 and have it be believable. Which one is it?
He's got one where the Bond girl was literally 23 when he was 53.
That was For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah.
And that was a little weird. That was a little weird.
Yeah.
Bond's back on a boat, guys. We haven't seen this for one whole movie.
So he's on a boat. And this boat chase scene is kind of cool for a couple of reasons for me. One, the bot boy.
Yes.
He's amazing. This kid is fucking amazing. This kid is a street urchin trying to sell a wooden elephant to people. And he's like, oh, this wooden elephant, real elephant, 100 baht. You very pretty, 50 baht. Help me out, 20 baht. Come on, stop being cheap, 10 baht, right? James Bond comes along.
Not just any people, by the way. It's Sheriff J.W. Pepper.
He's back. He's back. Fucking J.W. Pepper's back.
He's back, and he's in Thailand for some reason.
For some fucking reason.
Now, when J.W. Pepper, he gets a quick scene right here, and they are parked. They were on the river, and they park, right? And his wife, I forget her name, like Maybell or something like that. She goes up and she sees these wooden elephants and she's like, oh, I really want a wooden elephant. And J.W. Pepper's like, elephants? Maybell, we're Democrats. To which I say, no, you're not.
In 74, maybe.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of an odd history there. Yeah, there's pretty highly likely that they were George Wallace voters, you know what?
What I mean? You know what? I stand. This is why you're on Look Forward,
right? But I mean, but not like if I'm looking at the J.W. Pepper character and I'm making a list of likely destinations for him to take a vacation to, Thailand is probably number 173.
Well, he's there for a very specific reason,
right?
Which is He got, you know, it was kind of uncomfortable him being racist to black people last movie.
So he has to be racist to Asian people instead, correct?
You pointy-headed slow-pod! No wonder you're late, y'all still in your pajamas!
Said if only Andy was exaggerating on all those lines, but...
No, yeah, I'm just quoting
from the script, right?
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Said you get...
So here's what I'm wondering with J.W. Pepper. Is this like British people like making fun of Americans and just putting the ugly American in here basically?
No, because an American guy wrote the movie.
Okay, then an American guy making fun of Southerners?
Yes, that's exactly what that is, basically.
Both time-honored traditions in cinema.
Yeah, but rest assured, no matter what ethnicity J.W. Pepper's gonna be around. If it ain't white, it ain't right, according to J.W.
Let's take a vacation, Maybell. Let's go see them weird little yellow slant-eyed bastards and ride around on boats in their crazy slant-eyed town. Look at all their pointy heads. It'll be hilarious.
Oh, shit. So...
The amount of chaw he has in his lip is just fucking disgusting. Yeah. I hate every second he's on screen.
So there's a weird Harry Saltzman story here, by the way, that kind of occurs around the scene. Because this is how far gone Harry Saltzman was from the rest of what was going on with the production. So when they were writing the script and they were doing location scouting and they went to Thailand, they had these elephant races in Thailand, right? And so Harry Saltzman's like, oh, this will be great. We'll have an elephant race in the script. This will be fantastic. Dude orders 200 elephant shoes without telling anybody. And of course, an elephant race never made it into the script because Tom Mankiewicz was just like, I don't know what the hell he's talking about, but whatever. Harry Saltzman just being Harry Saltzman. And then while they were on location, all of a sudden these crates of fucking elephant shoes show up. And Cubby Broccoli's like, what the fuck is this? And Tom Mankiewicz realized what had happened. He's like, oh my God, Harry Saltzman just fucking ordered 200 elephant shoes thinking that we were putting an elephant race somewhere in the script. Without actually consulting anybody to make sure that it happened. Not a surprise that Harry Saltzman was done with the Bond franchise after this movie.
Oh, shit. Oh, man. So, yeah, the chase scene happens. We get our first cameo from J.W. Pepper. Meanwhile, Scaramanga kills High Fat and usurps control of his empire by taking the Solix MacGuffin with him.
I find nothing remotely amusing about Mr. Bond's escape.
You underestimated it.
Even my influence doesn't extend into the British Secret Service. I shall lie low, too. I don't intend to jeopardize a project in which I've invested half my fortune when it's ready to yield billions.
And where will you hide out?
That does not concern you. Take this. Return it to the plant and don't leave there without my permission. May I remind you that you work for me. I took you on as a junior partner to be an occasional convenience, nothing more. I did not hire you to interfere in my affairs. Is that clearly understood?
Yes, very clearly.
I now regret having even considered employing your services, but that is beside the point. Bond doesn't know you're in Bangkok. He's never seen you, but he knows me. That's the problem.
There's no problem.
What happened?
Mr. Fat has just resigned. I'm the new chairman of the board. He always did like that mausoleum. Put him in it.
So Christopher Lee would talk about, so like the Golden Gun was something that they legit made, like it literally can disassemble into all these things.
Yeah, they made like
and be reassembled.
This is when we get to see him put it together. It's like it's his pen and a lighter and a cigarette case and his cufflinks, I think.
Yes, he said Christopher Lee. Christopher Lee said this gun was the bane of his existence while he was filming. Because having to get really good at putting it together and taking it apart was the hardest fucking thing, apparently.
Yeah, because he's the man with the golden gun. He has to be a super pro at it.
Yes.
I mean, come on, man. Like, it's not like it's solving a Rubik's Cube, right? Like, it's...
Right. Said he also brought it into the U.S. with him during when they were doing the tour for the movie. Basically, he was going to be on the Tonight Show. They actually confiscated it at the airport because they thought it was real.
Hey, a testament to the prop master.
Fine production design, yeah.
So that evening, Bond reunites with Bond reunites with Goodnight. And they go, Goodnight's all, you know, I don't want to be one of your passing fancies.
Right. I like how that lasted 8 seconds.
Right. That lasted about as long as it took to get to the next scene. And she was like, yeah, I guess it didn't work, huh? Splish, splosh, splish, splosh as she's walking around.
Yes. Well, the excuse is I'm weak. But yes, you really are. In this movie, especially.
So,
I still love you, Brett Eklund. I really do.
Your
character is terrible.
They start making out, right? And Andrea Anders visits Bond and they surprise him. She surprises him. So at first, Goodnight is just under the covers. And Andrea comes in and she's having this conversation and they're both sitting down on the bed and like this is really awkward, right? And And Bond eventually is like he kind of makes his, you know, he kind of woos Anders. So he's like, quick, go into the closet, good night. And she's like, but my clothes are in there. Shut up, bitch. Get in the closet. And then Bond proceeds to fuck this woman on this bed with this other woman in the closet. Like, and I'm putting myself in her position, like, what the fuck would I do right now? I think I would just burst out.
But she knew he was doing it for the job. Like, yes. She gets it.
She's
gets
not
it.
Not just some chick. She's part of the mission, man.
I can't. Nope. Sorry.
Now that being said, like, the only way that Bond could have been more certified G and bona fide stud in this scene is if he had just, like, whipped the covers off the bed and be like, all right, this is all going to happen at the same time.
That's right. That's right.
I was kind of in the middle of something, but you can jump in on this if you want.
Like, I don't know what I have to do, but it has to be done.
This is also the scene, right, where we find out that she was actually the one that sent the bullet because she wanted him to come basically save her from Scaramanga.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Which is why he was not interested in killing him when he saw him and just went after the McMuffin.
So she said that she will hand over the Solex at a Muay Thai bout the next day. So the next day comes, we're at the match, and
which they had to do legit, by the way. Like, they act, the production team actually booked a Muay Thai event just to get the atmosphere because they didn't feel like paying a stadium full of extras.
Oh shit!
To do this.
So,
really, you sure it wasn't a sumo wrestling event or a karate event? I'm actually surprised they figured out the thing that they do in Thailand by this point.
Well, yeah, like you said, they like to stay up with the current events. So,
Asia, whatever, go.
High fat, hip, whatever. They're all Asian. It's all the same.
Well, fortunately, high fat's dead now, so. Maybe right. That'll cut down on the confusion.
So I have no excuse. Yes.
Wait, rest in peace, high fructose corn syrup.
So at the match, we see Anders there, and she's captivated by this match. And Bond comes out, and he's like, you know, hey, that was really great. I enjoyed fucking you last night, especially because I had another woman watching me. And he was like, did you bring the device? And she's not saying anything. And it turns out that she is dead. Then Scaramanga sits down next to him and introduces himself. And he's like, yeah, that was a pretty hard shot to do, but I did it. And I feel real good about it.
Even more difficult because apparently shooting her, the bullet came in at such a high velocity to pierce her skin and heart, but not high enough to move her body from the position in which it was sitting in any way, shape, or form. Amazing bullet.
So up to this point, Scaramanga's whole thing is like, nobody knows who I am. There's no photos of me. And he just like walks up and is like, sup, I'm Scaramanga.
I would have like loved if Bond would have been like, prove it. And then Scaramanga lifts up his shirt.
Off his shirt.
Let's see your titties.
Oh man. At the match.
Oh, James Bond can't do anything about this, by the way, because Knickknacks behind him has got a gun on him.
Yeah.
But is also like half interested in the Muay Thai match, which I kind of thought was funny.
Yeah, like he's really like into it. Like he's got his popcorn and he's got his gun on James Bond, but you know, you got a ticket to a fight, you kinda wanna see the fight.
Oh, and of course he's got a teeny tiny gun.
So Bond spots the Solex on the ground because apparently, like you said, Brad, like the velocity of the bullet hitting her was not enough.
It must have transferred all to the purse. That's what happened. It went through her body. All the kinetic energy went through her body and just exploded through her purse and made the Solex fall out of it. That makes sense. Okay. Physics, guys. Physics.
So Bond spots it on the ground, and he is able to pick it up and pass it off to Hip without Scaramanga noticing.
Yes, Hip is disguised as a peanut man.
Right, and Scaramanga is also really into telling his origin story during this whole ordeal.
Yeah,
like he can't be bothered to notice anything that's going on around him.
He was. What do you say? Like, man, I was my best friend was an elephant, and then somebody shot the elephant, so I shot that guy because fucking PETA and PETA blocks. And yeah, so that's why Scaramanga is Scaramanga, because that's where he discovered that he likes killing people. He's like, I like animals, but I like killing people even more.
Yeah. So while he's doing that, James Bond's able to slip the Tesseract off to Hip.
Hip gives it to Goodnight. Goodnight puts it in a purse. And then Goodnight is trying to put a homing device in the trunk of...
Right. Stick it under the bumper.
Right. How'd she get it open? How'd she get the trunk open? And two, why are you sticking it in the trunk? Just stick it under the bottom of it, right? But Scaramanga finds her and shoves her in the trunk of the car and takes off. She has a two-way radio with her, and Bond is... Like, Bond... is realizing what Q realizes whenever Bond talks to Q, because the look and the voice, the disdain in his voice. Good night. Where are the keys? Oh, I got the keys, James. Aren't you proud of me? God damn it. Good night.
So James Bond and Hip are both like trained secret agents, and neither of them knows how to hotwire a car, apparently.
Right. James Bond can drive any vehicle known to man, but he can't start it.
Yeah. Nope. Needs a key. Needs a key. Should have left it in the visor.
So they're trying to find a way to chase down Scaramanga and Nick Nack. And we see James go into a car dealership. And steal a car that J.W. Pepper just happens to be in.
And who the fuck looks at cars while you're on vacation? Like who goes to an exotic land and goes to a American car dealership while you're getting away from it all?
Well, Maribel, while we're in Thailand, I might as well get an AMC Hornet.
I want to know.
There is no reason for him to be here at all. No reason whatsoever.
Apparently, they did not even sell AMCs in Thailand at the time, so this doesn't even make fucking sense.
Yeah, they had to build their own dealership on location.
But clearly, AMC threw some money at them. But how did they pull that? Okay, I remember like fucking why can't I remember his name who played James Bond?
Roger Moore? or one of the other ones?
The Irish one from our youth.
Ah, Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan, thank you. All right, people got all pissed off when Pierce Brosnan was driving BMWs around. That's at least a nice car.
Yes, yeah.
Where was the outrage for the AMC Matador and shit?
Not only that, but Roger Moore went through several different cars in his tenure as Bond, because we would get the Lotus next movie.
Yeah,
that's fine. A Lotus is like it's about having nice fancy cars. Why is he in a fucking Hornet?
Well, you got to imagine that that's a nice car for Thailand.
Oh yeah. Hey, and maybe J.W. Pepper knows something we don't know. Maybe they're like, you know, $500 over there.
Yeah, maybe. I want to know how much the Louisiana State Police Department is paying their employees to be able to take trips to Thailand and shop for cars there.
Well, let's get real. Thailand's not expensive.
So they give chase, and this is an extended chase scene. And I say it every show, and I'm going to say it again. They probably could have cut a little bit out of this chase scene. to make the movie.
Now I think you're just being
maybe
being contrarian.
Well, it's like my catchphrase now, so I gotta say it.
Right. I actually like this chase quite a bit. I think it's a good one. Partially because it has what might be the best car stunt in a Bond film.
And the worst sound effect.
Right.
Oh my God. So they're chasing, right? And they
And he convinced J.W. Pepper to let him drive his car because he's like, are we going to get commies? Yes. I love killing commies. Let's go.
So during this chase scene, and I'll set it up and let you guys talk about all the details and stuff. But during this chase scene, Scaramanga and Bond are separate. They get separated by a river between a couple of roads that runs parallel to the roads. Bond sees a bridge that kind of has a corkscrew thing going because of shoddy Thai workmanship. and Bond proceeds to back up. He runs this essentially a ramp. It corkscrews the car. The car lands on the other side and it looks fucking awesome. And it's one of the best car stunts, like you said, it's one of the best car stunts ever. And what do they do in the movie? They put the weirdest, stupidest, dumbest, rootinest, tootinest sound effect that I've ever heard to completely undercut the coolness of the scene. It's a slide whistle. Like, come on, man.
Right. And that's, I mean, and so John Barry, once the film came out and he heard it in the context of the movie, regretted this for the rest of his life.
I would imagine.
Like he was completely beside himself that he put that in the soundtrack.
Fucking, we were on a lot of Quaaludes. I don't know what I was thinking.
But the stunt is amazing. So they found this stunt because it was popular. Apparently, the guy that did it performed it at the Houston Astrodome, and it was like all the rage at the time. So they got them. Like, they're like, we have to have this in the film. So they literally built this bridge, and they had to build it to these exact specifications. The car had to go in and like had to be completely balanced, had to be, you know, the exact speed they needed it to be. Like Andy said earlier, they nailed it first try. The driver that performed the stunt in the movie had never done it before in his life.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty damn amazing.
Yep. And so like when they did it, like the whole production crew, like they had like a party basically afterwards. They were so impressed by it. Like Roger Moore was telling the stunt guy, he's like, thanks for making me look so fucking good in this scene. Cubby Broccoli goes up to the guy who designed the stunt and he's like, that was amazing. What would you think about doing it again? To which the guy responded, that'll be very expensive if you decide you want to do it again. So they waited for the dailies to come back. And then the next day they're like, no, we got it perfect. We don't need to do it anymore. So they did it one take. That was all they needed. And it's an amazing stunt. But like Micah said, all you can pay attention to when you watch the film is the very distracting slide whistle sound effect that they had.
God damn it. God damn it.
It's a black mark on it.
On an otherwise, like, completely silly movie. But, like, I don't know. It pisses me off every time I see it.
And then immediately afterwards, J.W. Pepper, who's gotten thrown into the back seat by this, and unfortunately didn't break his neck. Well, I've never done that before. And James Bond's, well, neither have I.
Oh, man. The chase concludes when Scaramanga is able to get his car into a shed and transforms his car into a plane, which flies by with and flies away to his private island.
Hey, Brad.
What's up?
At any point during this, because there's always the point where they go into the actual James Bond theme.
Mm-hmm.
Did they ever? I didn't notice if did they ever do like it's usually when James Bond's doing the most badass thing.
Not you know what? Come to think of it, I can't really think of a time when they really used it.
Okay, so why didn't they, for like a re-release or like the, you know, whatever edition, just change the slide whistle to ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba-da-ba?
Because they saw how much maligned George Lucas was when he made any edits to anything in the original Star Wars trilogy. So they said, good or bad, we got to leave it alone, because otherwise the purists will come out of the woodwork and shit all over us.
I don't know of a single person who doesn't think that's the worst audio cue in cinematic history.
But no, yeah, you're right. I honestly can't think of a time where the Bond theme was prominently featured. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. This is the coolest part of them doing the actual Man with the Golden Gun theme. Cause they had kind of mixed it in with kind of Asian-y sounding ching chongy chings. But during this whole car scene, they have it really prominently featured, and I like that cut of it because it doesn't have Lulu. But yeah, that would have been the part, I think, because doing a giant corkscrew jump, I mean, for fuck's sake.
So Scaramanga's flying car, despite the fact that it's ridiculously ugly and yes, completely impractical, was actually something that existed. Like, they based this on something that existed in real life, and apparently the guy that invented it had accidentally killed himself in his flying car before they started filming the movie. So they didn't make an actual flying car. Like, when you see the flying car, it's all, you know, it's all back projection or miniature.
It's clearly a model.
Like, right.
It could be more of a model.
Right, but they did base it off of real life technology, at least.
Also, the Thai cops show up and arrest J.W. Pepper, and there's no resolution to this, so I assume
that he's still in a Taiwanese jail.
Yes, he's having bamboo shoots shoved under his fingernails in a Taiwanese prison for the rest of his life, which is actually, I mean, that makes me feel good.
It's a fitting end. Can we also talk about how the Taiwanese cops were arguably the worst actors, because they literally had the same facial expression on their face during the entire scene? Like, even when they're seeing the flying car, like, they just look stoic as shit.
Well, I mean, they are Asian.
Yeah, I mean, they say that, you know, emotion is conveyed through the eyes, Brad. I mean, if you can't open them up, you can't be wowed. You know what I mean? A bunch of high fats over there in police uniforms. Oh, man. Do I have to tell people that I'm joking? I'm joking, folks.
No, you're behind the paywall. It's cool.
As long as you're behind the money wall, you're fine. the Thunderdome of the TNP Studios Network.
Oh, man. All right, so next scene, they pick up Goodnight's tracking device, and using that information, they find out where Scaramanga's island is. So Bond flies a seaplane into Red Chinese waters. And
so these islands, by the way, they basically discovered them. Like no one had really discovered them before. They found them during location scouting. It's these little islands off the coast of Phuket. They are now a major tourist attraction. And if you go onto Google Maps and look at them, they are literally called the James Bond Islands now.
Wow.
At this point.
That's cool.
They are pretty cool looking islands.
Yeah. And they would actually return to this area when they did Tomorrow Never Dies.
Very cool.
Well, that's unfortunate. But cool
island. That's very cool. So yeah, Bond flies to Scaramanga's island. Scaramanga welcomes Bond. He does the villain thing where he shows him, you know, like, hey, this is what I'm working on. And that little MacGuffin there is going to control this whole entire plant.
Yes. I like how he also has the solar energy plant, which was cool because this was Ron Simmons' first big break before he got into professional wrestling as the guy that runs the solar energy plant.
I was going to make a joke about a light-skinned black guy being a pervert to a white woman.
And I just thought it was funny how,
like someone we know, but
like, you know, knick-knack the whole time is, if he dies, all this will be mine. And, like, his solar energy empire has one employee.
apparently, it's all he needs.
Yeah. Kra is his name.
There's also, inside the solar power plant, there's also a hilarious sign that just, it just tickles me because the sign makes no sense whatsoever. It says, absolute zero must be maintained to prevent prompt criticality.
Yes.
Right. even more hilarious because absolute zero, for those who don't know, is not a real temperature. It's a theoretical temperature. It's not something that actually exists.
Oh, that's funny.
By the way, Kra is Sonny Caldinez, who still alive at 84. Good for you. He was in Raiders of the Lost Ark as Mean Mongolian. And he's also in The Fifth Element as Emperor Kodar Jaffet.
Oh, my wife would know who that is. I have no clue. I don't know Fifth Element that well.
I had to Google it, and I'm like, oh yeah, that was a guy in there. But yeah. So he's pretty much is a big guy in things. He's just spent his entire career playing a goon.
Now I can only see Ron Simmons. So
I mean, and also the first black world champion in wrestling history. I mean, that's
true. Yeah,
he's got a lot of achievements.
There you go.
Yes, and then. But, you know, you put him near a hot white woman in a bikini. Again, when he's the only employee at this power plant, he hasn't seen a woman in a while, so I'm going to forgive him on this. But he got a little creepy.
Yeah, he got really creepy.
He was like, damn!
So Scaramanga shows him all this crap, right? And as a display of power, he takes his
of passive aggression.
Right?
You mean
he takes his big sun laser and shoots down, blows up James Bond's plane, so he can't escape.
The whole time he's doing it too. He's like, hey, you want to see what it does? Check it out. Okay, here's where the sun power collects, and then it comes through here, and then I can collect it in this gun, and there goes your fucking plane, asshole. Fuck you.
And like I said, again, back to know-it-all Bond. Like, Bond, as they're walking through taking the tour of the facilities, Bond is literally explaining to Scaramanga how everything works. And Scaramanga's like, I don't fucking know. Like, I just fucking live here, man. I'm
gonna
get
really
rich.
Do science. That's what Ron's for, you know?
Oh, man. So Scaramanga, Bond, and Goodnight have lunch. Scaramanga then proposes a pistol duel with Bond on the beach. Two men, mano a mano, you know, his Walther PPK with its six bullets to Scaramanga's golden gun with his one. I'll only need one. Like, oh, all right.
You live well, Scaramanga.
At $1 million a contract, I can afford to, Mr. Bond. You work for peanuts. A hearty well done from Her Majesty the Queen and a pittance of a pension. Apart from that, we are the same. To us, Mr. Bond, we are the best.
There's a useful four-letter word, and you're full of it. When I kill, it's on the specific orders of my government. And those I kill are themselves killers.
Oh, come, Mr. Bond. You disappoint me. You get as much fulfillment out of killing as I do, so why didn't you admit it?
I admit killing you would be a pleasure.
You should have done that when you first saw me. But then, of course, the English don't consider it sporting to kill in cold blood, do they?
Don't count on that.
I could have shot you down when you landed, but that would have been ridiculously easy. You see, Mr. Bond, like every great artist, I want to create an indisputable masterpiece once in my lifetime. The death of 007. Mano a mano, face to face, will be mine.
You mean stuffed and displayed over your rocky mantelpiece?
That's an amusing idea, but I was thinking in terms of history. A duel between titans. My golden gun against your Walther PPK. Each of us with a 50-50 chance.
Six bullets to your one.
I only need one.
Like that. Now, Micah, you'll be happy to know that the producers finally listened to you. Because this duel, which is, you know, the climax of the film, they actually cut half of what they filmed out and left it on the cutting room floor.
Good.
Another good longstanding James Bond tradition is shitty excuse for putting the hot chick in a bikini.
Yes.
Yeah, because she just does what she wants.
Well, and, no, she's in the bikini. He's like, oh, I like a woman in a bikini because they can't hide weapons.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever, you pervy old Cuban. But yes, Britt Eklund is she's earning her paycheck in this for the remainder of the movie because she's doing good things in that bikini.
Yeah, and not talking a lot, which is
but yet still too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Still too much. And I like how she's like trying to let Bond know like about what Scaramanga has got going on because she doesn't realize that he got the Grand Tour as soon as he landed. And she's like, oh, James, these mushrooms look particularly interesting, don't they? And James's like, yeah, I got you, bitch. Like, I got it all. And she's like, but I could stay here forever, James. And Bond's like, seriously, like, I fucking know. Like, you don't have to talk in code. I've seen the island. Shut up, you dumb bitch.
Oh, man. So
I went down to the basement. I met Ron. I've done the whole thing.
Yeah. I am aware of what is going on here. The two men stand back to back and are instructed by Nick Knack to take 20 paces. At 20, Bond turns and fires, but Scaramanga has vanished. Eventually, Nick Knack leads Bond into Scaramanga's murder funhouse.
According to the rules of the Field of Honor.
And while in the funhouse, I'm really glad you told me that they trimmed this down because there's only so much like walking around we can take because we've already been to the murder house, right?
There are so many questions that this scene invites.
Well,
we go through.
Nick Knack kind of like here's a little bit of the plot here, which Nick Knack is like telling him, hey, you know, hey, he's in there, go kill him, then I can take over the island, and then I can boss Ron around. I can make Ron bring me Tabasco. But so I think that from what I could put together, that explains why he's so pissed later, because he wanted to inherit the island and...
And Bond blew it up, yeah.
Well, I mean, Bond didn't, but yeah.
True, yes, you're right. Bond actually had very little to do with that.
No, Dan Ass did it.
But like, so like, as Bond's like creeping through the funhouse, he finds the edge of the map, apparently. And lo and behold, it's a glass wall that, for some reason, doesn't go all the way around on this platform on which it sits on.
That's hilarious.
I can't come up with any explanation as to why the glass wall doesn't go all the way around.
Terrible level designer.
Yes. Indeed.
Got invisible walls. And then no walls, like Jesus Christ, man. So the two men are in the funhouse, right? And just like in the beginning of the movie. The Scaramanga is walking around, and we see the camera shot is there's the camera, then there's the Bond mannequin in the foreground and Scaramanga in the background, and all of a sudden the Bond mannequin. The Bond mannequin it turns around and it's revealed that is the real James Bond He shoots Scaramanga in the heart, and
the surprise of that's kind of ruined because when they're panning behind it, like Roger Moore can't keep his fucking hand still.
Right.
But that leads to question number two. So as Bond is climbing through the base of the funhouse, basically through all the metalworks, he loses his gun.
Oh, yeah.
And so he took the gun that the mannequin was holding, which means that for some reason, Scaramanga took the gun that he had on his James Bond mannequin and loaded it. To which, again, I can't think of any plausible explanation as to why that makes sense.
Oh, God.
He was a stickler for accuracy, you know?
Like, did he think that maybe the mannequin might come to life one day and that would keep him on his toes? So that when he shot the mannequin? And then also, like, Scaramanga was within eye range of the chamber where the golden gun was pretty much at all times. So how did Bond sneak up, put on the suit coat and tie that the mannequin had, stashed the mannequin somewhere where it wasn't seen, and then assumed, like, this fucking scene, I swear to God.
This scene
while Tattoo's watching the whole thing on camera.
Right, with Nick Knack not able to see what's going on.
He's really quick.
Apparently.
He's a very lithe 50-year-old man.
So, eventually, good night.
This is not the end of the movie for some fucking reason.
No, yeah, it's
Scaramanga's dead, and like, hey, let's keep going for 20 more minutes.
Right.
Well, this is a Tom Mankiewicz Bond, so the climax in the movie just serves to get us to Secret Act 3.5.
Right.
That happens after everything else.
Well, I mean, we built this set. We might as well blow it up. I mean,
so
we should do something with Ron, right? Like, we brought him here.
And they damn sure did do something with Ron. So Goodnight attempts to make Ron a joker by throwing him into a vat of something, not knowing what it would do. And apparently it upset the balance criticalically, or whatever that word was. And so the plant is about to explode. But
they have to get the MacGuffin first.
You have to get it.
We can't just leave the MacGuffin behind, everybody.
The villain's dead. The owner of the MacGuffin, Gibson, is dead. And the island is about to explode. So there's really no point in having the thing. But, we got to get it. And it's incredibly difficult to get, as James Bond is using a hammer and nail to fucking jimmy the thing open to try and get the Solex carburetor out of its protective casing or whatever.
And really, all this scene served to do is to make Mary Goodnight look like that much more of a fucking idiot.
Right, because she fucking set the thing off with her ass. That's right. Andy was not joking when he said that ass is the reason this thing is going up in flames.
Look, man, ass can do a lot of things. And you can lose your whole island for some ass. Basically, you got to be careful. I was in my research looking up Ron's career here, by the way. He also played an ice monster on the old Doctor Who series. So I'm going to say this is his origin story.
Oh, there you go.
He got thrown into a vat of, what was it? Frozen.
Frozen nitrogen. Or liquid nitrogen.
Liquid nitrogen, yeah. And then started terrorizing Doctor Who after this. So there you go.
They escape on Scaramanga's junk. Not his testicles and penis. a Chinese junk. Not a smaller testicles and penis. A Chinese junk is a boat. It is a boat. And they escape on this boat. And, by the way, here's Nick Knack trying to kill James Bond. And this is... I just don't see any other Bond doing this, right? Like, I don't see any other Bond... like going toe to toe with a little person, and it's just
it's goofy. It's very Roger Moore.
Yeah,
It's very Roger Moore. I also love how Nick Knack is chucking bottles of wine at him, which Roger Moore is breaking, but yet there's no liquid anywhere when he's shattering these full bottles of wine.
Roger Moore is able to subdue Nick Knack the way anyone would subdue a little person, by putting them in a suitcase.
Foot Locker. Right?
And then,
I don't know how you subdue your little people.
Right, exactly. And I hadn't seen this movie in a long time. I was like, did he just throw Nick Knack overboard?
Nope.
I don't think he did.
It's implied that he does. He actually basically like wrapped him up in the crow's nest. Somehow he took him out of the Foot Locker and had him in the crow's nest just by himself, which I also don't understand how that fucking works.
Right.
Yeah. And after there's been bottles shattered everywhere, he comes back down and sees Goodnight, and she's like, got the blanket. He's like, oh, you got all the glass out of the bed? Sounds good. This dude's fucking.
and of course we get
that quick. Like, have you ever broken any glass? There's a lot of glass around. But whatever. We would get the
what would become a Roger Moore tradition, where M accidentally interrupts his post movie lovemaking with the girl. Yes.
Thank you.
Well, aside from Scaramanga's third nipple, they also have his junk's cellular telephone number listed in his file as well. And so they figured, let's try that. Maybe Bond got away.
We know
on
nothing,
the boat.
We know nothing about this man except he might have a third nipple, and we know his phone number. But that's it.
But I will admit that as M is calling for Goodnight on the phone while they're getting down to it, Bond picks up and says, "Oh, she's just coming, sir." That ain't bad.
I see what you did there.
That ain't bad.
I see what you did there. And then the movie ends. Look, I like this. I like this movie. It's a guilty
pleasure. It's fun. It's absolutely fun. Yeah. It's dumb and stupid, but it's absolutely fun.
Absolutely.
Again, one of the best villains. Love Scaramanga.
Yeah.
If not for Christopher Lee, this movie would be towards the bottom of the pile for sure.
Easily.
Yeah. Leave no doubt about that.
Yeah. I had read that like one of the initial casting choices was Jack Palance. And I'm trying to imagine this movie.
The reason that they wanted him is because Tom Mankiewicz kind of envisioned the duel between the two at the end as being like the ending duel from Shane.
Ah.
So I guess that's the only reason that he thought of Jack Palance.
Oh, okay.
We need a Cuban. Jack Palance. Perfect.
No, but like I said, this movie, and like I said, this is goofy Roger Moore before things really went off the deep end, which we would start to see in the next film when he does things like dresses up like Lawrence of Arabia and have exploding bolos at Q Branch and things of that nature.
Get ready, folks. Thank you, guys. This is excellent. This was my favorite Roger Moore movie. It's all downhill from here for me. But
I've still got one more that I like that's coming down the pipe. So
excellent. All right. Well, The Men with the Golden Tongues will return in The Spy Who Loved Me.
Good night. Good night. Sleep well. Want to get rid of some